Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, make aid work. Catholic development agencies are calling on governments around the world to live up to their promises to the poor. Caring for the sick and dying. This year's World Day of the Sick focuses on those providing palliative care for the terminally ill. And life-saving vaccines for children. That's the focus of a new financial scheme which was launched here in the Vatican last week. Welcome to the programme. Make aid work. The world can't wait. That's the call from an international network of Catholic aid and development agencies, which has launched a new campaign in the lead-up to the G8 summit of leaders of the richest nations in Germany next June. The campaign is calling on the governments of both wealthy countries and the developing world to take stock of how far they've come on their promises to the poor, the so-called Millennium Development Goals drawn up at the United Nations in the year 2000. These include the goals of halving the numbers of people living in poverty, cutting child mortality rates, and facilitating access to education and healthcare by the year 2015.
And these Millennium Development Goals, the MDGs, are also important because they are politically feasible. They are not utopian. We're not saying we will wipe out poverty by the year 2015. We're saying that there are various steps that we can make, both in the so-called rich countries and in the so-called poor countries, to achieve these goals of cutting poverty in half and by making sure that every school child goes at least to primary school.
Duncan McLaren is Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis, one of the two main organisers of this campaign.
And now we are nearly halfway through, and so we think it's time to take stock of where we are with those promises. But it's very clear that at the current speed, the MDGs will not be achieved by the year 2015. And therefore, just as with the debt campaign and the Jubilee debt campaign, we need to mobilise the public to put pressure on their politicians, and in this case, especially before the G8 summit in June, which will be in northern Germany. And this campaign is part of that mobilisation. We see this as a window of opportunity to remind politicians of their solemn promise to the poor, and we want them to give a progress report on the commitments that they made in 2005 in Gleneagles in Scotland.
We want to see the figures, and we want to see the projections also, how they are going to progress after the G8 on aid, on debt relief.
Christiane Overkampf is Secretary General of CIDSE, the other main partner behind this new initiative. She told me why it's vital for both church leaders and ordinary lay people to be involved in this campaign.
So we'll have one focus about involving ordinary citizens in North and South in the campaign, and they are invited to write postcards to the G8, and to in particular Germany as hosting the G8. And on the other hand, also, citizens in Africa and Asia and Latin America will approach their own governments to make aid work for poor people in those countries. So that's one side of the campaign. And the other side of the campaign is about church leaders from Africa, Asia and Latin America and G8 countries. And they are going to form a delegation under the leadership of Cardinal Rodriguez from Honduras. And they are going to visit G8 leaders in May in the run-up to the G8. So they are going to visit Germany. They are going to see German government officials, the German vice chancellor, for example, or most probably also the German finance minister. They are going to go to the UK. They are going to see the British government, they're going to go to Italy, and they are going to raise the voice of the Catholic Church on the same subject matter that we are concerned that aid should work for the poor.
How important do you think the church involvement is overall in this campaign? You mentioned, for example, the importance of the church in the Jubilee campaign back in 1999. Do you think, again, the church can have a really crucial role in changing attitudes and in pushing these ministers to making a difference?
Yeah, I'm really convinced that could be the case. So if we look at the example of the Jubilee campaign, then I think it's clear that it was the contribution of the Catholic and the Protestant Church jointly that brought about the change. If you look at the signatures being collected in the Jubilee campaign, the vast majority of them came from Catholic and Protestant constituencies, but also the kind of ethical imperative that the Church brings and that also this time the bishops and cardinals will express, I think this impresses upon politicians. And I think also the long tradition that the Church has on working, on fighting poverty really on the ground, the knowledge of the reality of the poor on the ground, but also our own credibility in working towards change. So we are not just asking the governments to do something, but we are taking our share of that. And I think all that together makes that I think the voice of the Church, the voice of the lay and the voice of bishops and cardinals has been listened to in those circles. I'm truly convinced, yeah.
As you well know, there are those who say the MDGs are impossible. We will never achieve these goals by the year 2015. You clearly don't share that view.
I mean, if progress is going to continue as it continues now, we'll not reach them. That's clear. But at the same time, I think they are realistic goals that has been calculated. When they were set in the beginning, governments have calculated whether this is realistic and they have made their projections and they were realistic. I mean, they are still far below what we would ask for, you know. We are about eradicating poverty, so halving poverty cannot be anything that we are satisfied with. But I think halving poverty by 2015 is realistic, but only if massive steps are going to be taken now. If not, we'll not see that happening, and millions of people will suffer from that.
Make aid work. But just how effectively does development aid money work in countries where governments are weak, corruption is rife, and rural communities are often isolated and cut off from essential health or education services?
If development aid and debt relief is focused on poverty reduction, it can make a big difference.
Paul Samangasu is Africa representative on the Caritas Internationalis Advocacy Committee and was involved in the monitoring of government development spending in his own country, Cameroon. He says many other African nations have also made important steps towards poverty reduction through debt relief and other development aid mechanisms.
In Zambia, an umbrella group of 100 citizens' organizations monitor and comment on their government spending decisions. Through this kind of participation, Zambians have succeeded in increasing the proportion of money allocated to poverty reduction from 30% to 60% of the Zambian budget. Increased spending on district hospitals and clinics and provisions of medicines have helped to bring about falls in infant mortality and malaria, and an increased awareness of HIV/AIDS. Even though the public consultation is not perfect, it is definitely a step in the right direction. Improvements in agriculture, health, and education can all be attributed to people having a say on how aid money was spent. In Uganda, aid increases led to an increase of primary school enrollment from 3 million children in 1997 to nearly 8 million in 2003. In South Africa, a measles vaccination campaign reduced the number of cases from 66,000 in 1996 to 117 in 2000. In Tanzania, increased aid has enabled government to double spending on education between 1999 and 2003. While these are a few examples, we can draw some important lessons for other countries as well. First, citizens and civil society organizations must have a say on how money is spent. Second, Governments must be fully transparent about how they spend the money. Third, governments must be accountable to their citizens and not primarily to the donors. And fourth, governments have to fight corruption on all levels of administration and the private sector. We must hold our leaders responsible in rich and poor countries for how the additional funds are being used. Are they being used in the best possible way for the people? Are the people involved in decisions? Are the funds being used in a transparent way? These are the things we have to hold our governments accountable for in the North and in the South.
Do you see it more important to make progress here on the G8 countries, or do you see the campaign that is going on at the same time in the developing countries as actually more important to make this work, to really get the money going to where it's most needed?
I would say that's equally important. You know, I think if there are no resources and no additional resources being made available, and that is very much a responsibility of donor countries, of the G8 and other donor countries, then I cannot see the progress happening, because then just the resources will not be there to be spent on health and education and other things that are urgently needed to reach the MDGs. But at the same time, if governments in southern countries do not take their responsibility, if money there is not being spent on poverty, if it's going into private pockets, if it's going into projects that are not really helping the fight against poverty, then also we will not see a change. So I think it's two sides of the same coin, and they are equally important. So that's why we have that campaign that involves people in the North and in the South. And we don't find it sufficient to just approach the G8 or just approach southern governments, but it needs to be done at the same time and with the same pressure, I'd say.
Just tell us, if you can, what you're hoping to achieve by this summit, concrete goals that you would like to see at the outcome of this summit in Germany, the G8 meeting in Germany.
Well, I think, on the one hand, I think if the G8 would really have a thorough debate and a thorough focus on poverty reduction, that would already be an achievement. And if it would not be only focused on the northern agenda and the northern self-interest in terms of economic development or energy security or whatever might be on that agenda. And then I think one of the things that we'd really like to see is a serious stock take of where they are in implementing the commitments to the MDGs, but it also in implementing the very concrete commitments they have made at the Gleneagles Summit 2 years ago in 2005. So we want to see the figures, and we want to see the projections also, how they are going to progress after the G8 on aid, on debt relief. Well, and I think that would already be quite something if they would do a serious stock take there.
A very practical question. Yeah. Catholics, people who want to become involved in this campaign, what do they do? Where do they go?
Where do they go? So they can visit the CIDSE or the Caritas website, so CIDSE.org, and there they will find a link to this campaign, and they can download appeals and postcards and get more information. So that's a very concrete way of getting involved, and they can get postcards and they can start sending those postcards. But people can also become part of an online gallery where they can have stand-ups carrying banners, make aid work, and people from all over the world will register, and we will work with that also then with the G8 and with the media. So that's another way of being part of that.
And just to remind you of what the Church says, one of the most recent statements from the Church was Archbishop Loyola, representing the Holy See, who spoke at the UN General Assembly last September. And he said that the fulfilment of the MDGs were necessary to correct the fundamental inequalities in the world economic system. And that would mean advancing a moral alternative to war or terrorism, because the dehumanizing poverty that we have in our world and the so-called war on terrorism are intimately linked. That building peace for tomorrow requires doing justice today. And today we are calling on our Catholic constituency, the Catholics throughout the world, to participate in this campaign to do justice now.
Duncan McLaren there, the Secretary General of Caritas Internationalis. And earlier you heard Paul Samangasu, Africa representative on the Caritas Advocacy Committee, and Christiana Overkamp, Secretary General of CIDSE. Sunday, February the 11th, marked the Church's World Day of the Sick, an observance started some 15 years ago by Pope John Paul II to coincide with the feast day of Our Lady of Lourdes. A special Mass was held in St. Peter's Basilica on Sunday evening, celebrated by Cardinal Camillo Ruini. And earlier in the day, Pope Benedict spoke of the Church's concern for the sick and dying, as well as for all those who provide practical and spiritual care for people facing illness and death. My colleague Charles Collins tells us more.
È necessario sostenere lo sviluppo di cure palliative che offrano.
Speaking during his Sunday Angelus, the Pope called on healthcare workers and relatives of sick people to offer human support and spiritual companionship for the terminally ill. Sunday was the World Day of the Sick, celebrated every year in the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. This year's theme was palliative care, which is given to those with incurable illnesses. Mentioning the miracles often associated with the Marian Shrine in Lourdes, the Holy Father said there occurs there an even more profound miracle. The sick and infirm accept their sufferings and offer them up for the salvation of the world, uniting them with those of the crucified Christ. This year, the focus of the feast was in the city of Seoul, capital of South Korea. The Holy Father's representative in Seoul was the president of the Pontifical Council for Pastoral Health Care, Cardinal Javier Lozano Barragan.
It's very important because it's the test of every religion, how to make a point of solution to the biggest problem of the pain, of the suffering, of the illness, of the death. And the meaning of that is to arrive to the very, very end, the very limit of the human existence. And how to answer that? Only with the cross of Christ. Christ is risen, okay, but through his death in cross.
The Holy Father ended his Angelus address by entrusting all those in the world who are sick and suffering in body and spirit to the maternal protection of the Virgin Mary.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus. Amen.
And my thanks to Charles Collins for that report on Pope Benedict's Angelus address. In a special message to mark this year's World Day of the Sick, Pope Benedict noted that illness inevitably brings with it a moment of crisis and sober confrontation with one's own personal situation. Despite the advances of science, he said, a cure cannot be found for every illness, and thus in hospitals, hospices and homes throughout the world, we encounter the sufferings of many of our brothers and sisters who are incurably and often terminally ill. In addition, he added, many millions of people in our world still experience insanitary living conditions and lack access to basic medical resources, with the result that the number of human beings considered incurable is greatly increased. The Church, Pope Benedict stressed in his message, wishes to support the incurably and terminally ill by calling for just social policies which can help eliminate the causes of many diseases and by urging improved care for the dying and for those for whom no medical remedy is available. Meanwhile, last Friday, Pope Benedict met here in the Vatican with Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer and several other finance ministers who were launching a new scheme to promote life-saving vaccines for children in the developing world.
I am pleased to welcome you, the finance ministers of Italy, the United Kingdom, Canada and Russia, as well as other ministers, distinguished international leaders, and important international figures, including the Queen of Jordan and the President of the World Bank.
Pope Benedict noted that the launch of this new financial scheme, known as Advance Market Commitment, coincides with the Church's World Day of the Sick. He encouraged the effort to promote scientific research directed to the discovery of new life-saving vaccines.
Such vaccines are urgently needed to prevent millions of human beings, including countless children, from dying each year of infectious diseases, especially in those areas of our world at greatest risk. In this era of globalized markets, we are all concerned about the growing gap between the standard of living in countries enjoying great wealth and a high level of technological development, and set of underdeveloped countries where poverty persists and is even increasing. The creative and promising initiative launched today seeks to counter this trend, since it aims to create future markets for vaccines, primarily those capable of preventing infant mortality.
But just how does this Advanced Market Commitment Fund work in the provision of these much-needed vaccines? Well, put simply, it acts as a bridge between drug companies and the developing nations, which often need their own vaccines, since strains of infectious diseases vary greatly from country to country. Up until now, there's been little financial incentive for researchers to work on these vaccines, but the new fund guarantees a commitment to purchase the medicines once they are produced, providing a crucial incentive to the drugs industry. President of the World Bank, Paul Wolfowitz.
On average, vaccines take 15 to 20 years to get to the poor at an affordable price. The AMC breaks that vicious circle, which has kept vaccines from saving lives in developing countries. With a legally binding donor commitment to subsidize purchases of vaccines, when the product meets international standards, companies will be encouraged to invest. That will help save lives. For developing country governments, the AMC means that funds to purchase these vaccines will be available, not for a year or two, but for a decade or more, even past the life of this initiative.
Every year around the world, millions of people die from diseases that could have been prevented by vaccines. But at a press conference following the papal audience, British Chancellor Gordon Brown said the new scheme aims to save millions of young lives over the coming years.
If by our actions today we could save the lives of one child, that would be worthwhile in itself. But with this one initiative and $1.5 billion, we are able to say that over the course of the next 25 years, the lives of 5 million children will be saved. And by our common action and by this shared initiative, this generation can begin to finally eradicate some of the world's worst diseases. Now, ladies and gentlemen, finance ministers are not always noted for their generosity or for their compassion, or for the willingness to spend money. But this appalling arithmetic of death and disease around the world has moved all of us to action. This year, and every year until we make a difference, 7 million children will die from diseases where preventative cures should exist, but are not yet available. Now, no healthcare initiative can succeed in transforming lives unless it also gives attention to building the capacity of healthcare systems. But the advanced market mechanism we are launching today is a new and cost-effective vehicle that will accelerate the development and production of new vaccines. And it will mean instead of high-cost and low-volume production of vaccines, we have the potential for high-volume and low-cost production, and we can ensure that the many will not be denied the vaccines and medical advances that are available to the few. Pneumonia, as we have heard, is the major infectious cause of child mortality worldwide. As we have heard, it causes an estimated 1.9 million unnecessary deaths a year. It is responsible for almost 20% of all child deaths. It's one of the main reasons why in the poorest countries, one child in every six dies before the age of five. And so with this advanced market mechanism for pneumococcus, we hope that over the coming 25 years, millions of lives will be saved. But before us also is the dream, as we have heard today, that by succeeding with this initiative on pneumococcus, we can then accelerate medical science to address the other diseases, malaria, tuberculosis, followed by HIV/AIDS, scientific advance and practical delivery that no previous generation could ever have imagined, but a dream that can become a reality in our time if the common purpose that we're exhibiting today, putting the power of finance at the service of innovative medicine to address one major disease, can be converted over the next few years into an even more ambitious resolution with even more countries involved, the next challenge we now will face and surmount to put the finance that we have at the service of innovative medicine to eradicate every major disease that the world knows.
I assure you of the Holy's full support of this humanitarian project, which is inspired by that spirit of human solidarity, which our world needs in order to overcome every form of selfishness and to foster the peaceful coexistence of peoples.
Pope Benedict XVI speaking there to Chancellor of the Exchequer Gordon Brown and other finance ministers who were here in the Vatican for the launch of a new scheme to promote life-saving vaccines for children in the developing world. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme of Vatican Radio. Don't forget you can join us again at this same time tomorrow. And remember, you can always find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org and click on the English icon. Stay tuned. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.